Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening. Welcome to another edition of the New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Associations. I am speaking to you live from Washington, D.C. I am your host, Bilal Masadiq Bynum. And again, this is Black Belt Wall Street New Africa Business Association. Tonight, our topic is continuously, we're going to continue to talk about natural disaster preparations. Natural disaster preparations. And we look forward to continuing our discussion on natural disaster preparations. And as soon as we come back from a sponsored identification. Be right back right after, after we listen to one of our sponsors.
If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you loved your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you held your white teacher?
Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers?
And welcome back to the another edition of Black Wall Street and the New Africa Business Association. And again, we're speaking to you live from Washington, D.C., and I am your host, Bilal Masadiq Bynum, along with my co-host,
Abdul Aziz Shaheed, and
Assalamu alaikum and greetings, Brother Bilal.
Greetings to you, Brother Aziz. How's everything going with you?
Well, everything's good, brother. Everything's going well.
Well, again, after a nice vacation, we are back in the sallow again. I'll tell you, the vacation felt rather good because, remember, Brother Aziz, you and I, we do this every Wednesday. Rain, shine, sleet or snow. We're out here on this radio station talking about business, network marketing, and identifying businesses. And I know our emphasis is the African American community. And we've said so many times we don't put that emphasis on the African American community because we are African Americans. And we're trying to favor ourselves. No, we put that emphasis on the African-American community because of the value of the African-American community to African-Americans. We need to go back to our communities and build businesses back in the communities. You have African-Americans as consumer spendings. We're spending over $1 trillion a year in consumer spendings. Now, of course, we knew before 1965, at the time, and I say 65 because that was the ending of black wealth and what we know to be the black soil. And we know that black soil, we're talking about farmland. And we know the farmland is where they sent all of our slaves. And that and they call it the black soil. And that black soil ran all the way from Texas throughout the South to include Maryland and Delaware. So again, and of course we know that black soil not only produced the wealth of this country, but that same black soil produced wealth in our own black communities. But each time we built up that wealth, what they call an insurrection today, was done against us every time we would see where we would raise our powers and especially our financial powers. Because, again, if we can build the United States to be the most wealthiest country in the world from the that black soil or from the slavery that they forced us into from farming produce, well, if we can do that for the so-called slave masters, I hate to call them masters, but the so-called slave owners, then certainly we can do it, and we have done it for ourselves. But when we started talking about natural disasters, of course, there's not very much we can do about that, but as far as African Americans, we've been going through some type of disaster for hundreds of years. And but at the same time, we know that we can look back at our history and we can see where not only was there tremendous wealth forced on us from our slave slavery, but there was also plenty of wealth generated by our own business planning, especially during the time of what we know to be Black Wall Street. And we know that from the Greenwood District, which Black Belt Wall Street and Booker T. Washington and all the business planners that he put together to include the Greenwood District, was able to pay off all the sharecroppers, and African Americans was free of the next so-called slavery period in this country, which was sharecropping. And many things happened during that time after we were able to make ourselves independent of these slave owners and these sharecroppers who had us in debt. And every time we would go to pay off our debts, they would put surcharges as to where your debt is $5,000, but because we have put a surcharge against you, you know, it's $8,000. So yet every year that just went on and on and on until we was able to just pay off whatever was required, including the added debts that they would impose on us. But and of course that brought on the Great Migration, as to where African Americans left the South almost, I would say more than half of us left the South looking for better opportunities and even a better life, because there was no life to be had in the South because of there was hardly any income for African Americans in the South, so they moved north. And that migration we know happened in the late 40s, early parts of the 50s. And ever since that, what they call the Great Migration, we have given up on our homelands in the South. But Black Belt Wall Street continues to grow and to continue to grow. During the times of Black Belt Wall Street and Black Wall Street, and of course, there was many business districts that Black Wall Street had created, again, starting from Texas throughout the South. But the most recognizable business district under the Black Belt was Tulsa, Oklahoma, and because of their popularity, they were given the title and the name of Black Wall Street. They were the only state that was given that prestigious title of Black Wall Street, because Black Wall Street was able to finance with all of that oil that was being generated at that time, was able to finance Black Belt and all the achievements that Black Belt was able to achieve. And we can go back to some of those businesses that we know, and I'm speaking of the popular businesses. There was many others, but some of the most popular businesses that we know as far as history is concerned, we can start off with Marcus Garvey. Marcus Garvey, he got his start, and he was financed by Black Belt Wall Street. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad and what we call the Nation of Islam movement was all financed by the Black Belt. The Cotton Club, And as popular as we know that to be, was all built and financed by Black Belt Wall Street. Malcolm in the Nation of Islam was all financed by the Black Belt and the Black Belt and the Black Belt Wall Street. And of course we know trying to stop that financial success is the reason why white folks attacked and destroyed the Greenwood District or Black Belt Wall Street, thinking that that would put an end to the success of the Greenwood District and the success of Black Wall Street. But and they did. They was able to take the Greenwood District, or what we know as Black Wall Street, through their through that attack and killing thousands of our citizens, babies, females, mothers, everyone that lived in that Greenwood District. And we know the Greenwood District was a huge business district, again, famously known as Black Wall Street. That business district had no less than, they tell me, 100 square blocks of very, very successful businesses, to include banks, airports, financial institutions, real estate institutions. African Americans during the time of the Black Belt, and indeed during the time of segregation, was more financially sound during that time than any time in our history. And again, of course, we that destruction of the Greenwood District, or the famously known Black Belt Wall Street out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, yes, that disaster occurred. But that disaster did not stop the financial success of Black Belt Wall Street and the Black Belt districts, again, that ran from Texas throughout the South all the way up to New York. And that business success, again, we had our own banks in many, many different cities throughout the South. We had our own insurance companies. We know some of them known as North Carolina Mutual, but there was many, many other insurance companies. And you know, insurance companies is what brings on our banks. And so having the insurance companies, there was many banks in almost all of our communities. Our communities were self-sufficient. We did not have to go on the outside of the communities for no type of business planning, because everything was basically in our communities, to include our own airports. So again, and of course, that destruction that went on in Tulsa wasn't able to stop the Black Belt, because the Black Belt was just too big. And the only thing that stopped the Black Belt and the success, the economical success that was going on in Black communities all over, especially all over the South, what stopped it was integration. In 1965 is when the Black Belt and the business organizations that made up the Black Belt throughout the South was integration. once the Civil Rights Bill was passed and the law says black folks can live anywhere they wish to live, they left the South and started integrating into the white communities. And today, you can still see the results of that because the black communities, you do not have that many African Americans living in their communities that they left in the South. But looking at the opportunities that we've had from integration, and the word opportunity should not even be used, because we haven't had any opportunities. And what 1965 or so like that, Brother Aziz, that we're talking about in the integration period?
Yes, absolutely.
In that case, I guess we're talking about, what, about 70 years or so?
Actually, it was right around 1963, 62, when the military guys had to allow their people to go first, you know, and then they forced the public schools all around, you know, and I think Virginia might have been the last public school in the United States to integrate, Brother Bilal.
Yes, it wouldn't surprise me, but the integration, regardless, as we see, it didn't. As far as hindsight's and looking back, we can see that was the biggest mistake we could have ever done. But today, with the redlining and the discrimination that is going on to keep African Americans from being a part of the American dream, we're finding that it is time to go back home. Because going back home, and when I say going back home, going back to the black communities all over this country that you left, going back to the South, that's our home. And by going back to the South, and now's a good time to do it before it's too late. What do I mean about it's too late? Right now, brothers and sisters, as a financial planner, I've been saying for years that one of the best investments a black man or a black woman can make is building a business right in the black communities. Brothers and sisters, our clientele, I don't care what your business is. If you're an African-American, your biggest clientele is other African-Americans. So if that's the case, why not put your business, and this is why you're living, your business is in the white communities. The white folks is not your clientele. They still discriminate against you. But African-Americans are your clientele, doctors, lawyers, financial planners, real estate brokers. Your clientele is basically African-Americans. And if that's the case, why not put your business right in the communities where your clientele is from? Your cost to build, your cost, and the thing about putting a business in the African-American community, now you can own your business rather than renting it. And by owning your business and the cost in our communities is still low, and I say still because that is changing now every day. You have foreigners, white folks and all, buying up the black communities, and not only buying, but he's actually stealing the estates of many African Americans who left the South years ago, but you didn't take care of your estate planning. Matter of fact, most of you don't even know anything about estate planning. And so the farms and the land that was left to you, and I've seen this, I witnessed this for myself just here recently while I was taking this 2 weeks vacation. And you mentioned Virginia. I went down to Southampton County, Virginia, down there where Nat Turner had his uprising in a place called New Jerusalem. Today they call it Boykins. But I went there, and I can tell you right now, cotton fields are everywhere, but from speaking to many African Americans, they're telling me, man, that was my grandfather's land. That was my great-grandfather's land. That was my dad's land. And but white folks is got their cotton and working the land. And this is done because, again, when it comes to estate planning and taking care of your estate, you're being robbed. So this is why African Americans has got to go back to where they left and secure their inheritance. And their inheritance is that land that has been in their family for hundreds of years. So, Brother Aziz, when we start talking about natural disasters, we as African Americans have been living under natural disasters for a long, long time, for hundreds of years, ever since we've been here.
That's right.
So, but again, to put it in, and like, so at this point, we are bringing it to your attention for you to get prepared for disasters, and especially the natural disasters. But New Africa Business Association and Black Belt Wall Street, of course, we're going to, and our directors and our experts are going to be teaching on how to prepare for natural disasters through the FEMA, the government. The government's FEMA, because when there's a natural disaster and you see all of this destruction, sometimes entire states, sometimes entire cities, all types of communities, but all types of natural disasters are going on around us every day. And but from these disasters, after these disasters, it's FEMA that is going to take care of the recovery for those who survive these natural disasters. And we're going to, of course, our dear, our experts are going to be teaching continuously how to prepare and teaching you how to prepare for natural disasters. This is why those of you who are listening, you need to spread the message. because we need to, when you start talking about the different areas the different areas or the different zones, that goes with the disasters and how to prepare and how to make the announcements to get a recovery, to get the FEMA to help communities with natural disasters. You need training. And of course, we are going to continue. We've been training now, I think, for a little over 2 months. But this training will continue to go on. And those of you who are come on and get the type of training that you must, that you have, now you can help the government. And the government is looking for help in making preparations or making the necessary arrangements, paperwork, basically, and the communications that one needs in order to answer the government. And you, and of course, you're doing that through public announcements, grants, and what have you. And this is what we're going to New Africa, a Black Belt Wall Street, and the Black Belt Wall Street directors are training as we speak. As a matter of fact, the first hour of this program, you're talking to myself and my co-host, Brother Aziz, and we're talking about the business part of natural disaster and the business part of bringing new businesses in our communities, and of course the continuing business part of network marketing and identifying businesses in our communities so we can do business with each other. So, the first part of this program, you will be hearing from New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association, LLC. The second part of the program will be Black Belt Wall Street, and that is a 501c nonprofit organization. And that is being taught and by our experts, and the Sister Aisha will be coming on. She comes on with us and even participate in the first half, but the second half of the program, she takes over because, like I said, she's been an expert with FEMA for over 40 years. Sister knows what she's talking about, and you need to know what she's talking about. So, Brother Aziz, like I said, it's been 2 weeks of vacation and 2 weeks of me really laying back because, like I said, we are on this show. Not only us, but all of our directors, and we're on this show because when it comes to communications, when it comes to African Americans being able to share information with each other, especially when it comes to business, we don't have too many channels of communications as to where our entire country, our entire cities, or wherever one might live, we don't have too many ways of reaching and being able to communicate with each other like I would say others do. We don't have the ABC News. We don't have the radio stations. We don't have the TV stations. So again, we don't have the newspapers and so forth and so on. But we do have, and we try to use very effectively, and this blog, New Africa Blog Talk Radio, and our radio station, in the last 7 years, has done a pretty good job on bringing a few states that is participating with us on a regular basis. And, of course, we expect to expand that. So, again, we've been out for a couple of weeks, but I would say we welcome, we're back, and we're ready to do our jobs for another year. So, again, Brother Aziz, that was my opening remarks. I am going to give you a chance to do your opening remarks. And brothers and sisters, we'll be opening up the mics for those who are listening. We don't expect a real great big audience anytime you go out. We've always known anytime we take a couple of weeks off, our audience sort of look like go a little dead until we generate the momentum again. So hopefully tonight we'll start generating that momentum. But anyway, whether we do or not, we're going to go ahead and do our jobs. So with that said, Brother Aziz, welcome back. Thanks so much for your continuous loyalty to Black Belt Wall Street, New Africa Business Association, and we welcome your comments.
Yes, thank you, Brother Bilal. I'm glad to be back participating in this show, you know, doing our job as you and I set out to do, and as you first established, and then asked me to join in with you. You know, the business of marketing and networking African-American businesses and promoting them the best that we know how, you know, and getting them to do business with one another. Well, since we was out, things happened that I ran across. It's probably been there a while, but I hadn't really noticed them. And that was this Black Bank, supposed to be the biggest one in the country. And I just ran it across the day after you and I just talked, Brother Bilal, called the One United Bank, Black Bank. It's part of Black Wall Street resurgence down there in Greenwood. And they have membership all over the country, looks like. And I found that out. And the other starting thing you and I talked about was that Okokie, Florida. And where another Black massacre took place in 1920. And Okokie is about, it's right outside of Orlando, Florida. And back at that time, all down in that time, in the 20s, it was a lot of agriculture down there. And the African Americans down there had established themselves and was doing well in the agricultural business. They had pooled their resources together and farmed together, where when they took the crop to the marketplace, they were expecting to get a better price. But having a good product and being highly competitive, even better farmers than the other competitors, the white farmers, they wasn't given the same monies for their product as the white farmers were. Well, eventually, because of that type of competitiveness down in Okoe, Florida, OCO, Florida, it's like OCOEE, Okoe, Florida, the Caucasians got angry and the brothers that got away had to go through the swamp. Apparently, this brother escaped this massacre. And one of the survivors' children that lived is saying when they were coming up, she was coming up as a child, they always asked about this town, Osseo. Why nobody go there? Why y'all don't say nothing about this place? She said nobody ever talked about it until a European historian came up and wanted to know information about it. And she said at that time she never knew that this happened. And at that time, this lady's sister said, when the European come up asking about that, she said she knew what her life mission was then. She was an older person, and she said was to dig up the history on that. Well, today, they got a street named after the brother that took his brother out that escaped there to tell more of that harrowing and some other things going down there, but that's something I just came across out of the loud, and I thought that you might want to share that. And that put the name of that town in Florida, O-C-O-E-E, Florida, and it's about the Ocosillo of Florida massacre in 1920. Correlating to what Bilal was saying earlier in the program about the Black Belt, and that soil down there was beautiful black soil, and they were doing real well with it, but they learned how to combine their resources and put their product and sell it as one. And by doing that, they figured they could, you know, get more money and be able to contribute to the whole. And then again, as we see many a time, our success has been sabotaged by not sabotaging the business, but actual murder, killing. And what we're saying today is we can avoid that kind of stuff today and deal with it in a better fashion again by repeating what our ancestors did all throughout the Black Belt, and that is pool their resources together for a bigger vision. And that vision is to, by pooling their resources together, they were able to build a better community, you know, in their community. They were able to set up businesses. That's how it goes. They were able to set up businesses in their community. If it was making them a better, beautiful, more beautiful church to go to, making beautiful homes, businesses, a main street and that in their community. They didn't have to go outside of the communities in that. And if they did, again, they did a group purchase, a bulk purchase for the group, and bringing it back to the community with all those stores. If we ever see some of the pictures of that shown of the different Black Belt town districts around the country, in the Carolinas, North Carolina, South Carolina, Maryland, Delaware, and down, these communities, they were doing well. The people weren't trying to leave their communities like it started happening in the 50s and onward. So that, you know, a lot of migration, being a person from Alabama, a place called Fairhope, Alabama, a lot of my relatives in that county, in particular in Alabama, Baldwin County, the biggest county in Alabama, they headed north, straight up, Detroit, Chicago. And it wasn't because they hated home or nothing like that. It was because they were looking for a better life, to get better wages so they could, you know, have better homes. And a lot of the people, they sent money back down home so that the family could do better. So they wasn't getting no wages or no good wages down there and all that. And this is how the historical change, you know, took place. You know, we went from thriving to a lawlessness portion and lawlessness time in America, where the Justice Department was not enforcing any of the atrocities that was committed on African Americans. They were not enforcing that at all. So our people, you know, a lot of them had to leave the South because they just could not survive and live under those conditions. And that's what crushed a lot of it. And then the further nail in the coffin was when integration took place. And all our little corner stores and things like that were sort of like, you know, just we didn't go there no more. We started going to the big stores where it discriminated against us and all that. So with all that, you know, with that little thing and how businesses been up and down in our community now, today we're going back into that again, to having, you know, the new Black Belt and Black Wall Street initiative. And this initiative is allowing us in every little town and that is in America to be able to establish businesses together or individually, but together we seem to be making a bigger impact, and we'll have more funds and to be able to finance larger projects. Maybe not just one building in the area, but two. And you know, we got two businesses there that are businesses that our community use on a daily, that they use daily in their in their life. So, you know, again, all of these things are again promotion and guide and indication that we are continuing to do this. We're going to see a change in our community. But it's a must that, you know, we get together wherever you live. It don't have to be on national, nothing national or nothing like that. In the communities where you live, we see the absence of many, 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 you know, we see the absence of Black businesses in our community, period. We see other people from coming into our communities and doing business. And you know, we're not talking about a racial type thing or anything like that in promoting the New Africa Business Association, Black Belt Wall Street. We're not talking about anything like that. We're talking about the people that have been neglected and have neglected themselves. It's going through this time period wherein our businesses were attacked and they were murdered, things like that. We don't have to deal with that anymore. It's a clear pathway for us now to pool those resources together, and whatever the businesses is that's going to make money and our community need it, that's what we need to invest in. Not only just banking and things like that, but every little business. We know in most of our communities today, and that's even disappearing. You know, beautician shops as well as our barber shops. Most of the times we got to go in a lot of other places, but those are the biggest remaining businesses from the Black business era in our communities today. The beautician, the barber shops. And sometimes the little grills and that food places where we got a little barbecue joint, you know, doing the ribs and the chicken and stuff like that. And that's about it. Back in the day, you saw more than that, including a bail bondsman in the community. And we still have, further down south, you still have Black bail bondsmen, Black bail in the community, and that's a good thing in that sense too, because most of the time they don't rob members of our community like others rob our community, and I can say I do know about that from, you know, having certain relatives in that, going through that system. So, you know, it's small Black businesses like that that's still in our communities, but we're looking for bigger ones, these franchise businesses where you go spend your money all the time. Those in those communities are other people that own those franchises. We should own our franchises of those businesses in our community. They're producing, we're putting millions of dollars in them. And overall, the different black communities, especially in these larger cities like in Maryland, Baltimore area, the Washington, D.C. area, and that, in our communities, we don't know, I don't know, I'm saying we don't know. I would like to try to find out how much money is actually generated out of these communities around the Washington metropolitan area, out of the African-American community. And I'm sure it's a heavy volume, it's a large volume of money. And to see that money, to know that we're generating that type of money out of our communities, and then you look back at the communities, that's why our program is on, that Brother Bilal is promoted and I've assisted in promoting this. That's why the New Africa Business Association, Black Belt Wall Street, is here to not only inform you about the need for businesses in our community, but tell you about the tragedy of businesses that we have had in our communities and what drove them out of business. It wasn't that they wasn't motivated and did not have to get up and go and the foresight to know what was needed to be done. And I mean the fortitude to do it, no matter what the odds were. Today, we need to bring that type of thinking back in the community. We have some people that have large financial backing, and they're doing work in the community. We need more. You can't pinpoint anybody, say, who's making a lot of money that's not giving into our community and that's giving into our community. New African Business Association, we don't point any fingers at anybody in the African-American diaspora. But what we do say, and say every time we have our program, is we do need to say, the businesses that do exist, we try to promote, network, and market them, as well as those that want to go into business. And as Brother Bilal said, we have accountants, we have attorneys, we have financial planners. We have all types of professionals with the New Africa Business Association, Black Belt Wall Street, that can help you get to where, point you in a direction with the information that you need to know to get you where you want to go. And also, as Brother Bilal said earlier, our second portion of our program about disaster preparation and recovery, but primarily now our sister Aisha Abdul Ali is giving it out about teaching the program about disaster preparation and the benefits as well as the employment that you can have in helping the government alert the people and teach them how to prepare for these disasters that they know is coming, that the scientists know is coming. It's just like if you take some medicine that you know is going to cure you of something that's been prepared by medical scientists. Well, this is the same way these scientists that deal with the climate, the atmospheric conditions and that, the NCOAA, you know, those are the people that know what's happening around the globe, the planet Earth, based on how we've been treating the Earth. The Earth is crying. It's in sad shape. The waters are polluted, the air is polluted, the land, everything messed up. So, and with that happening, it's going to cause the earth to act in a certain way. And that way is going to be, it's going to wreak havoc back to the people that's mistreating it. Being that we know this is going to happen, there's certain things that we need to do in order to, when these conditions go down, like in the Bible and Holy Quran and the story about the prophet Joseph, when he was in a land wherein there was famine in Egypt, and he said, let me help. I know about this coming up, so since I know about this coming up, I'm going to let them get the land prepared for this, so when we go through this, we won't have mass suffering like it would be if we didn't have this. So this is what our next guest is going to be talking about, Sister Aisha Abdul Ali, helping prepare for this because it's going to happen so that we don't have to suffer like that. So this is you and I, if you want to, if I want to, by listening to her training in that, we can get employment through the government as well as help our communities get the grants and money that they need to be prepared as a community, not just as some individuals that live on one street or something like that or just one church, but as a community, the people around, because everybody around you, what you call your community, that some of them just don't have no clues, and they may not. But when the distress comes and that, believe me, they're going to be running looking for help. And the government say, if we can get to you and help you, it's going to be at least 3 days before we can get to you. So if you don't have food, shelter, or proper food and shelter and clothing and all that, that length of time, it could be quite harmful to you. Matter of fact, it could cause you die, as well as your family. So we're saying that there's opportunities to be safe and prepare for those changes when they come, as well as you can be employed doing the same thing, teaching others how to prepare not only themselves individually in case they cannot get out and get to the place that they know they can get all of the help that they need, but you'll be showing them how they, can survive those, 3 days at minimum, and perhaps they can get where they want to go. Because a lot of times, sometimes it's weeks before FEMA can get to help people in that. So all of these things would be taught in the considerations of that when we listen to our expert, Sister Abdul Ali, and she teaches us on that program, gives us more insight there. So, Brother Lyle, that was my welcome back, coming back, sharing information with our audience, hopefully. And thank you for letting me share that with our listeners, brother.
We certainly appreciate your comments, Brother Aziz. One of the things I do want to say, and I want to go over to Oklahoma, because I think Miss Williams is with us, and that is, as far as our disaster training. You see, because FEMA works in zones, and you take we're in zone three. Zone three means that Washington, D.C., Maryland, Virginia, Delaware, Pennsylvania, and I think it runs all the way down almost to the Carolinas. But you can see zone three. And I just named maybe around four or five different states. So New Africa, a Black Belt Wall Street, and the teachings, and I'll be bringing on hopefully Miss Williams here in a second. She can give us some more informative information. But the teachings that we're trying to prepare and to teach is because we are going to need, Black Belt Wall Street is going to need many members of many trained students, many taught students, I guess I should say, to represent all of these zones. So as you can see, Black Belt Wall Street, after they have done their training, they're going to need hundreds of thousands of representatives to go out and represent Black Belt Wall Street and answer what the government needs as far as having someone who can go into these communities and do the necessary paperwork, or at least let the government know just how severe these disasters are. This is the training that we're trying to do, and we're trying to promote training, like I said, hundreds of thousands, because if you take a zone that I just mentioned, a zone three, and you're talking about states all the way from Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, D.C., Virginia, you're talking about, I mean, how many millions of citizens could be in a disaster, and how many millions of citizens needs to have need their disasters known. And this is the training that we're asking many of our listeners. And not only are we asking many of our listeners, but we also asking our listeners to take this information, because how do you get this information to the millions or the hundreds of thousands of citizens that need the training? You're going to get this information by getting representatives of every state that's within these zones. And now we're talking about just one zone, Zone 3. How many hundreds of thousands of trainees do we have to have in order to just represent this one zone? So again, we need to, first of all, get the information out to the community. And right here, we're concentrating on Zone 3. Therefore, all of our churches, all of our large community centers where we can get to these organizations, and we will be putting together informative information, inviting them to come on and to get this training. But first, we have to get our information out to these communities. So we need to have representatives in all of these states, and we're just talking about Zone 3, but from Pennsylvania all the way to Virginia, we need to get the information out to our communities about the training. Therefore, how do we get this information? We're going to need representatives in these states to come on and when they hear something very constructive about disaster training, they can now go to their churches, their fraternities, their sororities, or their workplace, or their whoever is in their communities, and inform others. Because again, like I said, in this one zone, you're talking about five or six different huge states. And within these states, you're talking about millions and millions of citizens that could be under a disaster program or a disaster relief. Now, before I say or go any further, I am going to switch this over, and I am going to see if we have the director out of Oklahoma. Ms. Williams, are you with us?
Assalamu alaikum, my brothers, and good evening, everyone. Yes, sir, I am with you.
Yes, and so we're going to have your comments. I guess you heard what we said so far. But like I was saying, and you, I'm going to let you, because you could be much more informative on this than I am, because you have taken, you more advanced in the training. But we need personnel, like you're going to be hearing from Ms. Williams. We need personnel like herself, and we need thousands of them. So you can see that once we get our informative announcement out, we're going to need to have that information shared in our communities, our churches and what have you, so we can get hundreds of thousands of citizens. Because, and I say hundreds of thousands, but really, like I said, when you start looking at a zone, and like I said, you just saw, and I keep emphasizing, because there is no sense, there's no need. If I live here in Washington, D.C., and I'm in zone three, and millions of folks need to be informed, there's no need for me to concentrate on any other zone than three. But other directors who are in other zones, it's up to them to concentrate in the huge states that they're in. Because, but anyway, I am going to just shut up and turn it over. Ms. Williams, we welcome your comments.
Yes, sir. Good evening, everyone. And first of all, I'd like to welcome you guys back. I hope you had a very nice holiday, a very nice vacation. And we want to wish you a happy belated birthday. I understand you had a had a very nice occasion, and that's always good to be recognized for just breathing. There's nothing wrong with it. So we recognizing you, my brother, for just breathing and being here with us and guiding us and helping us with just being prepared, just sharing information. That's what it's all about, the sharing of information. And as you were saying a few minutes ago, in terms of being prepared for disasters, and as we already know, for the most part, because this is how we are, there, as whether to be prepared or to not be prepared, and chances are we're going to have more knots than band, the ones who are. So I'm looking at saying being proactive versus being reactive. Those of you who are listening, I would like for you to do one thing. Know your zone. Because as Brother Bilal just mentioned a few moments ago, when we after this goes down, whichever disaster, like for instance now, we're having flooding on the east on the east coast. We're burning out here on the west coast. So when you say, oh, you call FEMA and you all in a, you know, a tizzy, you know, you wondering, is this how it's going to affect me? Or will I have a home? Will I have myself? So when you call FEMA, one of the first things they're going to want to know is, sir, ma'am, which zone are you in? Because they're going to be more calm than you. Which zone do you represent? Which zone do you live in? Hey, somebody. That's not going to help you. So the first thing you need to find out, ascertain your zone. Which of the zones do you reside in? So when you call to get information or let people know your location or what you're experiencing, you at least know your zone so they'll know how to locate you. So,
Joy?
Yes, ma'am.
Joy. This is
Yes, ma'am. Good evening.
Good evening. I want would you use the terminology region as opposed to zone, because that's the FEMA's new terminology. So
very
I just
good.
Wanted to mention that to you so people won't get confused. Okay,
so
region.
We got an update, ladies and gentlemen. So know your region. Which region of the country do you reside? So when they ask you, well, ma'am or sir, where are you located? Which region are you in? They'll be able to better pinpoint, and that within itself will cut down a whole lot of rigmarole and time. The quicker they can find your location, the more quickly they can assist you, chances are. So know what your region is. Know that disaster preparedness can hit anytime, any place. And there are all different types of this. You know, we're waiting for the sky to open. You know, people, they ride down the street thinking that the sky going to open and something going to step out. No, don't think that. But there are things falling from the sky that will cause a disaster or can cause. So be prepared, at least to the best of your ability. And also keep working on your, I'm just going to say your duffel bag, your getaway bag, your emergency preparedness bags, suitcases, whatever you want to put, paper or plastic, whichever you want to put your disaster preparedness kit in, like things that you're going to need. The brother said if they can't get to you for 3 days, how prepared are you to sustain yourself until a rescue or someone can get to you to help? And they also talked about until they arrive, you are the person in charge. If you survived, then go help. See if you can help your, if you're mobile, you can get around yourself. See if you can assist someone else. See if that person can assist someone else, because we will have to be self-reliant until someone comes in with another plan. So, brothers and sisters, I'm not going to take up a whole lot of time, but if you're interested, as the brother said, that we do need volunteers, we need people to come on to help with this preparedness. And if you're interested in doing this, contact Sister Ali or contact one of us here at the radio station so that we can know your region or just assign you to attend the training, because some things are across the board. Some of the training you can utilize no matter what disaster it will be or we're experiencing, because these things will help you to help someone else. So I do thank you for your time.
Ms. Williams, we certainly appreciate the information that you was just given. And our director, the one that's teaching us all, she's with us. And now we're going to bring on our instructor. But let me just say this before I bring on Sister Aisha. Again, we must share this information. And like you said, the best way for a person to learn about being a natural disaster assistant or what have you, dealing with natural disasters as far as dealing with FEMA, the best way to know anything is to join these radio discussions and the training that our dear sister is probably going to be telling you something about right now as I get off this radio station. So again, with Sister Aisha, our natural disaster director, we welcome you.
Thank you. Assalamu alaikum. Good evening, everyone.
Assalamu
alaikum. I apologize for being late, but I knew that you all had it covered. I think one of the things that we want to do, Brother Bilal, is I will provide you with the information on all of the 10 regions and the states that represent the 10 regions. And maybe you can get it out, that information out to the listeners.
Yes.
This is one way, and I'll get that to you very, very quickly, as quickly as I can. But I want to just say that we are working hard to bring Region 3. Region 3 is the Mid-Atlantic region, and the states that represent Region 3 are Delaware, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Virginia, District of Columbia, and West Virginia. That's Region 3, the Mid-Atlantic region. And the storms that are very common are that NOAA and all of the other scientists who deal with this every day have identified that are highly probable in this region will be hurricanes, floods, extreme heat, winter storms, power outages, and earthquakes. And so I think that I live in Region 4. So the people you all are in Region 3, most of you, and I think you can identify with those storms in the past. And these are the storms that's coming in the very near future and the far future. And it's gonna really get really bad this winter in your region, because you are, according to NOAA, you're going to have extreme cold. And so you really have to be prepared. We want to encourage everyone to look at the schedule of the class, of the training course. For the month of September, we only have two classes left. That's the 24th and the 26th. Of September. We need you all to start entering these classes, taking this training, so you will not only be prepared for your family, but also for your community, for your organizations. People, one of the things we have never been taught before in public education is how to prepare for a natural disaster. It is not taught in public education. If we're going to learn this information, it's going to be essential for our survival and the survival of our families. We have got to learn how to adapt to this new lifestyle that we're going into. Now, I constantly say this every time I make I talk to a group of African-American people. We are the most adaptable people, I think, on the face of the earth. We know how to adapt. We have been adapting ever since we were brought into this environment. So it's not going to be difficult. You just have to have the desire. And one of the things that we constantly talk about in the class, there are four basic steps to survival. The first step is going from a state of awareness to a state of conscious awareness. We're all aware because we hear it every day about the storms, but we are not consciously aware. And that's the state that you enter into when you are ready to take action. Being aware doesn't mean you're going to take action to go to the next three steps of survival. It just means that you know. But conscious awareness means you're going to take action. And we know that it requires conscious awareness, because I'm going to take you back in history a little bit. Remember when the civil rights struggle began in the early days? We used to always talk about being militant or being in the struggle. Well, every African American knew that our parents and foreparents had been slaves, and that segregation was holding us down as a people. But every African American was not ready to take action and do anything about it. Not until the civil rights struggle was popularized by the people and the people got involved in it, and especially the young people got involved to the point where it began to hurt them to be segregated. It began to hurt them to be denied opportunities. And they got involved. Of course, my mother's generation and grandmother's generation, they wanted to get involved, but the young people. So they became consciously aware of the pain of segregation. So it forced them to become involved. Now, that is a concept of community engagement. It was successful then, and many of you who are listening are products of that struggle, of that era. It was successful then, but it's a sociological concept of community engagement. And this is what we know we must. It was successful then, and we know it will be successful again. And the reason we have adopted this model, this sociological model, is because last month, FEMA released their data. And as I said the last time I was on the radio, FEMA's data, they said themselves that preparedness has only increased by 2% in America since 2013. 2013, preparedness has only increased by 2%. Now, that's a disaster. And because FEMA has been around quite a while, and they are the source that have the billions of dollars, but they will not say that their model is not working. But I constantly say on the Alliance Connections and whenever I'm on the radio with them or on YouTube, Zoom with them, your model is not working. It is not a model for community engagement. But however, we as a people, as an African-American people, we understand this model. Just think about it. You know it. This is the model that we're going to use to move this platform of being prepared and being engaged in identifying and living through this experience of where we're going to have to go as a people and as a nation to deal with this climate change. Yes, we're going to have to adapt, and we're going to have to get involved, and we can do that. So I will, Brother Bilal, please hold me to this. Get you, there are 10 regions in the United States. These are FEMA regions, and most of the weather services and the health services, they recognize these regions. There are some other areas that you'll hear, there's four regions. But overall, based on the concept of climate change, it's 10 regions. So we're going to get this information to Brother Bilal, and we will also identify those storms that are prevalent and highly probable that they will occur in those regions. And this is what NOAA has identified, and we do work with their data, and we have a lot of respect for it. So with that said, I know whenever you have questions, please just chime in. Ask me the question. But we want you to also understand what's taking place. The wildfires out there in California, it's going to affect us tremendously. And the way it's going to affect us, I stated earlier, and this is what we deal with in the training. We show you a model of the storm and how the storm, one disaster causes another disaster. And we know that a disaster in California can have consequences 2,000 miles away. So what's happening in California is going to affect us in close to Region 3, the Mid-Atlantic region, because the wildfires are going to cause droughts. Droughts will cause because the earth, the moisture has been zapped out of the earth. And so you're going to have droughts. When you have droughts, you have earthquakes. Droughts cause earthquakes. Droughts can also, although in most cases they were caused by a wildfire, they can cause other wildfires in other parts of the country. When you have wildfires, you have poor air quality, you have food insecurity, your water supply dwindles, and you have loss of life and property. That's the devastation of what could happen, even to us on the East Coast as a result of the fires in California. We know that hurricanes and tornadoes cause floods. Floods cause all kinds of personal as well as property loss. Floods is a major cause of emotional distress because the result of a flood, when you are involved in a flood, it lingers. It lingers and it lingers for months and months within your family, within the devastation that the flood caused. It just doesn't come and in 2 or 3 days it's gone. It lingers because you've lost a lot of property. And so the emotional distress, according to the National Institute of Health, is very high in those areas where there is flood. As opposed in an earthquake, of course, you got extreme physical destruction. But these are the issues that we talk about in the training. I encourage you all, this training has been put together to take you through the very four basic steps of preparedness. And that is the first step, awareness to conscious awareness. Step two is planning. We walk you through the step-by-step process of having your family plan. And it includes every aspect of what you should do and what you should know before the storm. And you actually have an opportunity, as soon as you register for the class, you are immediately sent the template of the plan. It's a 5-page document. But it doesn't take the average family no more than 45 to an hour to sit down and complete this plan. We've got to do this. We've got to work with our family, assign various family members aspect of the process. After the plan, the next step is readiness. Readiness is having the supplies and the products that you need, as Joy said, to survive for 72 hours. 72 hours became the status quo after Hurricane Katrina. 72 hours is you're on your own at least for 72 hours before the federal agencies can get to you. Okay. So you have to have enough supplies to last for 72 hours. And fortunately, Summit, we have been working on putting together the e-commerce component of Summit Environmental Resources and it's almost there where we have all the supplies. And what we have done as a team, we have identified the storms in the different regions based on NOAA's information and other scientific information. And we have put together the emergency kits based on the storms in the regions that you live in. So when you go on the site, the summit site, or you just put in the name of your state, click the name of your state, then click the number of family members, and the recommended product come on the screen. We try to simplify this because we know that people are trying to go to the store and spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars for supplies and still get the wrong thing. So we don't want that to happen. And the price, we want the price to be affordable. So this is what we have done as far as readiness. In addition to readiness, the next step and the fourth step is to have your alerts in place. FEMA just came out last month with a new app, and it's a good app. And you can download it. The day it came out, I downloaded it on my cell phone, and it's full of information. You can also download the NOAA app. The NOAA app will send you the alert immediately for your region. And then, of course, locally, there are some apps that you might want to download. And we talk about the benefits of all of these things. So once you go through these four steps in your training, you are classified as being officially prepared for a storm. You have the knowledge base. You have access to all of the supplies and equipment. You have access to the alerts, and you also have a different consciousness. That's what is needed, and that's what all the agencies have said you must have. But we have put it in a model that we know works. And so any questions so far?
Yes, Sister Aisha, I have a question. I also have a statement. I'm going to start off with the statement and end up with the question. My sister just mentioned that I celebrated a birthday over the weekend. And my family showed the need to bring what some call a family reunion almost, because we expected a little small get together that ended up being a rather large get together. And we had representatives from many states, and some of the states was as far away as Michigan. But anyway, I had spoken with my oldest sister, and we was talking about the radio station. But when I mentioned what I knew about natural disasters, that got her attention 100%. And I was basically being somewhat informative, but I don't even think I was trying to be that persuasive. But the informative part of information that I was sharing with her really got her attention, to the point where she asked me to do an announcement at the gathering about the disaster information that I was able to pick up from being in the training and our discussions. And I told her that I would, but somehow she picked up from me. She said, somehow I'm not getting a lot of enthusiasm from you on this disaster. She said, "Your sister, my sister Bernice, know about this." I said, "Yeah," and she said, "Well, she's gonna be here also." She said, "Maybe I'm gonna go to Bernice, and I'm gonna have Bernice to do the announcement." And I said, "You know, that just might be a real good idea with me, being in the mental state I am. I'm in a state where I'm not trying to really even concentrate on anything. Until I get back on that radio. In other words, I'm getting away from the radio station. I'm getting away from all the information, like I was telling them. You see, this is work for us. This is just like going to your job for us. And when we do it all year round. And so when we take a vacation, I might be, I'm on vacation. Let's put it that way. So, but anyway, just make a long story short, my sister did, I told her, I said, "Well, you go ahead and make the announcement, and I will support your words." But anyway, to make a long story short, we talked about some of the things that we're talking about this evening, and the attention that we had from that audience, you could drop a pin. And I'm saying everybody there, we had their fullest attention. Not only their fullest attention, but had we been on the radio station last week, because that's when I passed out a lot of information and I told them, "Well, join us on the radio station. And that's where you're going to be hearing from Sister Aisha and even I told them our Sister Joyce, who is not here. She couldn't be here, but she has a lot of advanced training, so you're going to be hearing from her also. But anyway, had we been on the radio station last week, our audience would have been much bigger than what it is tonight, because again, we wasn't on the radio station last week, and I got a bunch of emails. Well, I tried to get on the radio station and you guys wasn't on. I had to send back emails telling them that yes, I'm still on vacation and I won't be coming off until tonight. So yeah. I realized that I realized that tonight, in other words, a lot of folks was looking, after they heard me speak, their interest was to hear it. And last Wednesday, they were trying to get on the station, but of course, we wasn't on. So this week, they haven't been informed. They don't know whether I'm on the station this week or not. But anyway, the interest that we got from that from that audience, from that attendance, told me how important what we're doing and the information that the community, because like the same thing that you're saying, Sister Aisha, is the same thing that most of the seniors in the community, and especially most of the church goers, the first thing they said, this is information that we need to have in our churches. This is information we need to have in our school. In other words, they realize this is the information that needs to be shared throughout the community. And next week, of course, I will have time to get back on my emails and tell that particular group who's standing by to hear this information and know more about the training. They'll know we're back on the air. But my thing is to say this, we got to talk, those of us who are directors, those of us who know something about, or whatever you know about the disaster training up to date, You got to share that information because the public out there is very, very interested. And they wasn't interested in too much of, I didn't get into much of our business networking or anything like that, but that natural disaster had their fullest attention. Now, so that's my statement. Now my question. The Colorado River, Sister Aisha, is drying up. The Colorado River, I'm saying, is from the measurements of what the river was, I would say a few years ago, compared to what it is today, it's almost like a swimming pool compared to it used to be a river. Now, that river it gives water to many, many different states out there in California and different places. And that river is drying up. The farmers, huge farmers, they were showing how dry their land is because they can't use irrigational systems anymore. The rivers, they need the waters for more important use than irrigating your crops. My question is, and I know we talk about 3 days and all of that's very important, but when you have a disaster as to where an entire river that supplies water, and you and we're talking, what we say, we're talking about regions.
Mm-hmm.
Then, how in the world do you prepare for a disaster? The entire regions, and we're talking about whatever states are in that region, all of them could be without water.
Yeah.
So that's my question.
Well, that's Region 8, and the states in that region, which Colorado, Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, Utah, and Wyoming, that's the Rocky Mountain region. And the storms in that region, in the past, floods have been severe. Floods, severe storms, Tornado Alley. And wildfires. And those states are in Tornado Alley. So it's expected that that will increase this year. Now, and of course, if you have dried, the river drying up, you're going to have droughts. Droughts cause wildfires. Wildfires causes droughts. And so that's what they can anticipate, a lot of droughts. And that's serious, but the climate patterns are changing, and I cannot say I'm not a meteorologist. I cannot say that there will not be floods because you have the other states, but there will certainly be droughts. And earthquakes have not been common in the Rocky Mountain region, but if you have droughts, droughts causes earthquakes, and it makes sense. When the earth, when you have a drought, the land dries out. When the land dries out, it's like a saltine cracker. The saltine cracker is dry, and you just touch it, and it crumbles. That's an earthquake.
Yeah.
Okay. When you have earthquakes, then you're going to have other storms, other kinds of storms. Earthquakes cause fires, isn't that? That's interesting. How we can cause a fire from an earthquake? Because the heat is going to rise up from the earth at the time of an earthquake. So we cannot take anything for granted that happened in the past. And it is expected that the weather pattern in the Rocky Mountain region, which is Region 8, which includes Colorado, is expected to change. But one thing for sure, it is still they are still recognized as being in what is classified as Tornado Alley. Okay. So I hope I answered your question.
Yes.
But
yes,
you, but what we want the people to get from the training is you have got to start, have the skills to make predictions on your weather pattern. If you know the cause and effect, one storm causing another effect, one disaster causing another effect, if you know the basics of what storm causes what other disaster, what disaster causes what other disaster, you can make predictions. And many of you are like me. I grew up in an area where segregation. So we didn't have a lot of resources coming from the city into our community. So we had to learn. We had to learn how to read the signs of the weather. We had to learn how to prepare, and we had to learn how to survive. And our entire survival was based on, you know, being prepared. We know that everything is by the will of God. We never forget that. But we had to be prepared. And it became a lifestyle for us. And that's the way we based our life from year to year, on preparing for the winter. The winter was considered our storm. We had heavy snow. We had freezing rain. We had blizzards. And our winter lasted for 4.5, sometimes 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to be prepared. And we could read the signs. And the older people, they could smell the air in the spring and the summer and know what was going to take place in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure some of you all have that same experience. But this is not difficult to figure out.
Yes, ma'am, it's called our knees.
It's what?
It's called our knees.
Our knees.
The bad weather is coming.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, bad. Okay, our knees. Absolutely. So we can do these things. This is not difficult. And I was talking to one of my team members, our staff members. I have been in the environmental sector for over 15, 17 years. I started out in oil and gas, then to renewable energy technology, and then to mining and exploration. And when I was in the mines, actually with the geologists, there were so many instinctive things that they use. These were scientists, but they use their instinct and their knowledge of how the earth looked last year compared to the way it looked today. So we have got to get back to some basic common sense and common knowledge that we all have, because these are unpredictable times and we've got to get serious. But you can't do it, folks, until we get educated. This past weekend when I was with a group of people, just about everybody in the room had a PhD degree, and I said, are you prepared? And they said, no, we're not prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, are you afraid that the storm is going to end up on your doorsteps? They told me that they were.
Mm-hmm.
But they are quiet. Now I said, well, why aren't you talking about it? They said, well, we just want to be quiet about it. Can you imagine? Mm-hmm. These folks have mm-hmm. PhD degrees, and this uh-huh. is what they are telling me.
Mm-hmm.
So it has nothing to do with your academic training. It doesn't have anything to do with what side of town you live on, nor the color of your skin. This natural disaster is going to confront every human being on this planet equally. So we've got to get moving, folks. And the sooner we get people trained, we get them equipped with their emergency kits, once they understand the nature of the area that they live in, they will feel more empowered. You become empowered for your own survival when you are prepared, when you are knowledgeable, and you don't worry as much. You know, silent worry is extremely hazardous to your health. But majority of us are coming into a stage of silent worry. Oh, let's not talk about it. Maybe it'll go away, or maybe it won't happen. Well, it's not gone away, and it is going to happen, you know? So I hope I've answered your question.
No, it's very, I'm sorry, brother. Go right ahead, brother Andre.
Right, I'd like to ask a question, of course. Just as, I'd like to know if a group of 100 people wanted to listen to this training and wanted to get this training, and it was on a Monday or Tuesday or something like that, could you accommodate, or is it just specifically on the dates that you suggested on your schedule?
No, I will accommodate. The schedule is because we need a schedule so we can have some order. Yeah, we do the schedule. But I also work with groups that have asked me to come in and do in person. On the Zoom, we can have 100 people. We can have 150 people. You know, if we're going to have more, then we'll have that. We'll accommodate that. So, no, any date that people want to get together, if it's more than 10, because I do have to have technology people, the back-end people. And I have to, you know, give them some time, give them advance notice. But we have a schedule. Follow the schedule if you can. If you cannot, and if you want to have a session outside of the schedule, just let me know. We'll accommodate you.
But let me just say this. The biggest thing is, like, I'm finding out, is that we that have been somewhat informed, we got to share our information, like Sister Aisha was just saying. Silence is not going to get anything done. And if we, who are saying that we're trying to get this information out there, and we know we know the large numbers that we need to get to, and especially in the African-American communities, because that's the communities that we really, really care about. We want to get the information to everybody, but like I said, our emphasis is our own communities. We got to talk about it, brothers and sisters. And once we talk about it, we got to bring folks onto this radio station so they can hear the informative information that we've been talking about here for the last 2 hours. Think about if we had 300 on the radio station right now hearing what we just talked about for the last 2 hours. Those 150, 200 or 300 people would be so enthused and so informed until they would be back on the following week. And now they just told their friends and their associates, brothers and sisters, I'm finding that we got to stop being silent. We got to open our mouth. And
absolutely.
I know for a fact because of what just happened to me. And so I am saying from that moment on, and I am saying when I get back to this station or when I get back in front of my email or when I get in front of a Facebook or wherever I am can get a large audience or be informative to a large audience, I got to share disinformation. And I am inviting all of us, but we got to stop being silent. I talk, but at times, even myself, I got to be much more promoting what we're doing. And so I am saying at the close of our discussion, was almost at the 9 o'clock hour. Brothers and sisters, directors, and all of our directors are not on here, but get in touch with those directors, and we need new directors from new states. But we got to start sharing this information, because the community, how can they not be interested and preparations for their own disasters, and they can see these disasters all around them. That's why they have such interest. And so again, we thank you so much, sister. I'm sorry, go right ahead.
I want to just quickly share with the audience, I received a call last night, night before last, and it was from a group of people who had to migrate to Houston, Texas. They were victims of the Katrina. You all remember that, of course.
Mm-hmm.
They contacted me and were telling me how devastated their lives still are. And they are looking for relief. They can't get their families back together. And when they in Houston, they want to move from Houston because the people in Houston treat them like they are migrants from a foreign country,
mm-hmm.
and that and they feel that they have come there to take the resources of Houston, and they constantly tell the people, we're Americans just like you are, we're not migrants, but they are regarded as migrants. So the migration issue is going to become serious, very serious. In North Carolina, we are being bombarded by people from California, okay? And it's affecting our real estate in this area. So we're going to have to understand what's going on, or we're going to become victims of it. And, of course, I have no solution for the people from who called me the other night, and I felt very badly. I just had to refer them to, you know, some other agencies, but that has what been 15 years ago with Katrina, something like that, and they are still being devastated and cannot get their lives. And they said to me over the phone, if we had known, we would have been prepared for what was going to take place,
mm-hmm.
but they were not. And that's where that 72-hour notification of having enough water and food came from, the Katrina incident. So Hurricane Katrina. So I just wanted to let you all know that there are people who are still devastated by these storms, but they recognize they didn't have the knowledge. And now that they have the knowledge, they feel stuck. You know, and there are no federal agencies now that are helping these individuals.
And Sister Aisha, I'm sorry. If I might add about the flood insurance, because many people may not know that under your regular insurance policy for your homeowners or what have you, it does not necessarily or may not at all cover flood insurance. So, you know,